Well, welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am here today with Tom Shea, returning guest, retired Navy SEAL, dear friend. And the topic today is mentorship. Tom, welcome.
Well, thanks, Tim. I'll begin by saying I'll be the mentee today because the past 8 years have been probably more you mentoring me than me doing it the other direction. But
well, much appreciated comment, and I feel the same way. So that'll make this all the more interesting because I think we both have a vantage point. I mean, I really wanted to lean in on this particular episode in the series on mentorship about the role of the mentee and what it looks like to be a mentee. So we didn't plan it, but in preparation, I was thinking that you had been mentoring me all these years. And so we both, I guess, have a perspective we can lean into on being a mentor or mentee. So I know from our relationship and conversations and a lot of your work with Unbreakable Leadership, both in your books, Unbreakable, Navy SEAL's Way of Life, and Three Simple Things, you talk a lot about mentorship. So how, just kind of at a broader level, Tom, how has mentorship manifested itself in your life?
Well, like everything that we do, Tim, and I've found that topics, not to confuse it, there's a conversation called, as soon as certain topics are raised, the concrete melts into the abstract until nobody knows what we're talking about. So mentorship for me has a distinction, and the distinction or the definition is somebody who is already successful that sees in somebody else something that's inspiring to them. So if I'm already successful, say I'm a multimillionaire and I've done a lot of great business, for me to be a mentor, I have to see something in somebody that moves me. And that to me is the primary distinction of mentorship, vice leadership, or vice some other conversation, is you have to be inspired to be a mentor. And that's very different than somebody has a problem that you can fix. And the mentorship idea or the notion of mentorship is the other person doesn't need fixing. They move you. And that engagement is quite different.
Yeah, let's unpack that a little bit, Tom, because I do think that's a unique distinction. You know, in some cases, mentorship is talked about in a corporate environment. Our podcast is really more oriented towards entrepreneurs and small business owners, a little less structured. But I do think there's something to be said in having been in a corporate environment myself many years ago and in a formal mentorship program where I did not pick the person that was mentoring me. There was a lot of fixing. It's a very good point you bring up. Maybe let's unpack a little bit of the distinction of what doesn't need to be fixed in people and really lean into what or how one finds inspiration in another.
That there is the weak muscle. I think it's a weak muscle that people have that they don't look for inspiration all the time. If we're now in a relationship called mentor-mentee, if the mentee is ripe with problems, the mentor will show up less. So if I have to fix all your problems constantly, from you're late all the time, from the fact that you don't have a skill and I'm trying to teach you a skill, emotionally, the mentor gets less and less and less available to make a difference to that human. Mm-hmm. And so the big conversation is, how do we seek inspiration? And now that I think my muscle is a little stronger than it was before, is I use the skill set called be moved by people. So I try to find daily something about what somebody does or says or how they interact with something that literally moves me. Having been a great athlete, and I'm old now, so I can't say that I'm a good athlete anymore, but at the top of my game, I remember driving down the street anywhere and seeing, and it's not an offense, a heavy person running. That's actually moving. Mm-hmm. That's more moving to me than somebody who's at the top of their game. Somebody running a 4-minute mile doesn't move me to get out of my seat. Somebody struggling and engaging is very moving. Seeing a woman with twins walking down the street trying to be a good mom, that's moving. Mm-hmm. So that to me is a one way to look at inspiration is be moved by somebody before you ever engage them.
So look for that inspiration or movement inside yourself. Yes. Yep. As you say that, I can think of some of my Spartan races where I saw some extremely big people doing some really cool stuff and having fun doing it. And it definitely is inspiring to see people that are willing to put themselves out there in that regard. When you think about, you know, you talked about the mentee showing up needing to be fixed. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting perspective in the sense that I really would like to cover in this episode if one is seeking a mentor, so they are the mentee, how do they show up?
Yeah, and the words may be weird. So the mentee inside, so the mentee's point of view is I'm trying to do something that I can't do. Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to be a financial advisor and I have no idea what I'm doing, the skills, the techniques, the lifestyle, what's involved in it. But I really want to do this. And it's also a point of inspiration. I really want to do that, whether it's own a business or whatever. The other aspect of it is they have to take their hat off and be humble and ask somebody to help them. Mm-hmm. Where I take my hat off and go, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm really inspired by you, Tim, that you have a successful business and I want your mentorship. That request has to happen from the mentee. Usually people come in, here's my curriculum vitae. These are all the things that I've done. And the mentor is like, man, I see this all the time. What's going to break you out? And now it's a problem solving thing. This guy has good skills, bad skills, and the mentor is immediately at a disadvantage of being a mentor because they're looking at a comparative analysis as opposed to somebody comes into your office and says, wow, Tim, I thank you for meeting me and I would love to be a financial advisor. I've been trying to forever and I want to work for you for a month for free because I want to learn from you. Mm-hmm. That puts the mentor in a place of, holy shit, it's a big difference now. There's a big difference inside of the mentor because that's moving.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a pretty important distinction too in the conversation relative to mentor-mentee is the mentee actually is probably the one that should be pursuing a mentor versus the other way around. Is that a fair statement?
The chicken and egg. I don't know which comes first. You can't be a mentor unless you're seeking people that inspire you. Then you're just a problem solver. Then you just own a business and you're hiring, firing people and they're a commodity, which is okay too. Some things can exist in that space. But a very successful man or woman eventually gets to the point where they sort of want to give away, not for free, but they want to give to other people. Until you've arrived at that place, you probably can't mentor. I got it. I figured something out. Like I'm now top sniper. I've done all the things I want to do. The next level for me isn't number one 2 years in a row. Maybe I want to coach somebody. Maybe I want to bring people up. Maybe I want to open a new business or help an entrepreneur. That seeking inside of the mentor simultaneously happens with the mentee arriving. Otherwise, it's just your problem solving. And that's not the mentor-mentee relationship.
Hmm. I'm thinking as I listen to you about one of the chapters in Three Simple Things where you sought out an ultra-marathon mentor. Would you be willing to tell that story? I think it'll
show the problem with the mentor relationship immediately. I think I grew up in the right environment in the SEAL teams where the SEAL teams are always seeking people who are better than them. If you're already a good shot, you go to the world champion. Yeah. And you put your hat in your hand and say, hey, I'm going to spend a week with you. So when I retired, I'm like, man, I want to run a 100-mile ultra marathon and I've never run a marathon. So I'm not going to go ask my wife, who's not a runner, how to run. And I'm not going to try to do it virtually, get a virtual assistant, teach me how to run. I want to go to the top people that have consistently performed over time. So I called the guy up and he's an older guy. I thought, well, I'll go run with an older guy because they'll probably run slower. That necessarily is not the case. And called him up, met him. put my hat in my hand, introduce myself with a lot of enthusiasm to do it. And he goes, why would I teach you? That's the other thing that the mentee has to realize is you got to make that person, you got to enthusiastically tell that person why they want to waste their freaking time with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a skill set nobody's teaching people. Like, hey, Tim, I want to learn from you. Tim gets 1,000 of these requests. What's going to break this person out? I had to say, hey, I don't know how to do this. And it's either going to be you or somebody else. I'm going to run 100 miles. And then they test you. Okay, I'll spend a day with you. And we're going to go out and we're going to train. He said, if you don't show up 100% available, I'm not interested. So I had to keep his interest up. And they don't do that in business. The mentee is expecting the boss or the leader to make them enthusiastic. It's supposed to be the other way around. I have to get this expert enthusiastic all the time. So I showed up in relatively good shape. And he said, okay, I want you to run with me. And he took off like a freaking goat. And I can't keep up with him. A comparative analysis in my head. Why I wasted my time. And I paid him money, which I think is also the mentor-mentee relationship, is you got to exchange value. If that person wants a banana or money, that's what they request. You got to give it to them. So I paid for a day and he blew me out of the door and he's up on the trail waiting for me. And I come around a corner and he's sitting down and he asked me a really great mentor question. What was that like for you? And I'm like, well, I can't keep up with you. He goes, that's not what my question is. What was it like? I said, I'm out of shape. I should be in better shape. He said, that's still not what it's like. I'm like, well, what do you mean? I've never been asked that question. Now I ask it all the time. And he said, I want to know how many times you wanted to turn around. I said, right when you took off. I said, okay, what else did you experience? I said, well, that why in the trail, I was like, man, he abandoned me. And I don't know if I need to go left or right. So I waited a little bit. And then I saw you way up ahead, knew it was the right trail. And I was down on myself for that. And he goes, good. The fact that you answered it authentically is worth my time. That has nothing to do with running, which is the weirdest conversation. He goes, now I understand that you're trainable. I'm going to ask you a question. You're going to keep your hat in your hand and answer it. Then he said, okay, I want you to not feel pain the rest of the run. So if your heart gets too much, if your legs get too much, I want you to stop or walk and don't worry about what I'm doing. So we took off and we're talking and he goes, hey, you're out of breath. He goes, either you're going to keep your promise and not be out of breath or I can't teach you. So I walked a lot. He goes, what's it like to walk a lot on an ultra? I said, it's embarrassing. He goes, good. That's a beautiful thing to say. Now it's easy to teach you because you're actually showing up as somebody that's trainable as opposed to I should work harder. I'm depressed and all that stuff, all that drama that people have. And he goes, okay, so here's something I want you to learn. Now it's a skill set. Now they teach you a skill set because they keep being inspired by the authenticity that you bring to it. And I learned that technique of pushing down on my feet and not my heels. When you run, you're supposed to push down on your legs, which is a hard technique. Actually took me 3 months to learn it. That's a big improvement. Notice what happened to your heart. Wow. He said, all right, now let's talk about what happens in a run. He said, you'll be down on yourself the majority of the time. Wow, I didn't anticipate that. I'm like, I wanted to learn how to run. Because running is simple. It's all the other stuff that I would love to teach you that made me a better runner. The running is easy. It's all the internal conflict that you're going through that mentors love to share. Like, you know so much about business. It's the fine points of business, not the transaction. Anybody can transact money. Like, computers do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the fine points that the mentor wants to get across. and so unexpected in the mentor-mentee relationship is it's the life skills that make the mentor worthy of teaching it.
There's a lot there in that story. The first thing that hits me is just the mentee really has to show up authentically in the sense that not the way they think the mentor wants them to show up, but to risk showing up and being authentic about how they're really doing. And obviously, as a mentee, you're seeking out a mentor for what they know and are good at, which is something you don't know or are good at. Mm-hmm. So that's, I guess, first thing is that authenticity is a big deal. The second thing is that the mentor is what I'm hearing you really say, and the mentor-mentee. The mentee is learning the finer points and nuances, not the technicalities of the topic. Mm-hmm. So it's a relationship about the subtle nuances, the gray areas, if you will, of the topic that make a big difference versus just the very technical aspects. Is that a fair?
I think so, because teaching skill set is technique. I know that leaders and the quasi mentor thinks that skills make all the difference. You can teach anybody a skill. It's the fine points that really boost people into a different place. Mm-hmm. And when you come from it, from like we said, the inspiration point, it takes a long time to learn skills. If you're going to bog the mentor down on, as the mentor, I have to be there for the whole 1,000 renditions of you practicing. I don't want to be there for that. I want you to go do that and then tell me your experience of doing it. And you're going to come back demonstrating higher skill set or lesser. And you're, man, I can't grab the gun this way. I'm trying this pitch, the sales pitch. It's not working. And it's the fine points that aren't working. Like I can memorize a sales pitch.
Yep.
Why can't I demonstrate it? Why can't I get in front of somebody and have authenticity? That's where the mentor comes in, which is, it's not an addition problem. It's like a to the power problem. A mentor comes in and makes transcendent difference to somebody because they give them 50 years of experience as opposed to technique. Technique is important. I just don't think it's 20% on the equation.
20 of the 100. Yeah. So another thing you highlighted in your illustration was around value, an exchange of value. And I think, again, that could be money, but isn't necessarily money. I think in the general construct, most people don't see a mentorship as a paid engagement, although I think to your point, it could be. But what are some of the values that you see a mentor getting or giving and then a mentee getting or giving?
Well, so I contact you just because I can't think of anybody else to talk to about. And you have a skill set that's, man, if I could figure out how Tim did that. And then for you to give that skill set up, call it $1 million skill set. For you to give that up, there has to be some equity of exchange where you get something in return and that person gets what they are seeking at some level. Whatever the mentor thinks it's worth to give it up, it could be just the relationship has a position of equity, getting to know somebody else. Maybe it's an exchange of money. Maybe it's an exchange. I'm a great shooter and you have a skill set and you're like, well, okay, I'm not going to give it to you for free because that's the other paradigm to it. Anything given for free and received for free has zero value, zero. You can tell me everything, but if I don't put anything into it and you don't get something from it, it'll just get whitewashed. So I have to give up, I have to risk something. You have to risk something and get something in return. And I think that exchange of value is also a very, it's a weak muscle. Tim's going to spend 5 days a month with me. I'm taking you from your business. You better get something from it or it'll wear you out, which is also inspiration. Like if I'm going to spend time with Tim or Tom, if I'm not getting something from it, it's not a personal satisfaction. It's just, man, that cost me $400,000 to take 5 days off. I better get something and that will exhaust itself. if there's not an equal exchange. Finding that equal exchange is also a difficult conversation.
Well, and I think it gets to what is equal in the sense that in some respects, what I'm hearing you say is the inspiration of seeing that other person, if I'm the mentor, seeing the mentee flourish, is that could be enough. That could be an exchange. Yeah.
You'll sit there all day with your kid just to see them, because they don't give you money, just to see them throw and catch the ball the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That's worth $1 million, literally. Like, oh man, I would do anything to see that happen. The exchange is you're exchanging time and services or whatever, and they're giving you back something that you see of high value.
Mm-hmm.
That's a legit conversation to have, very difficult one. Giving it for free means it has no value.
Well, and I think, again, the value could very well be the, I don't know if satisfaction is the right word, Tom, but it's the word that comes to mind, the satisfaction of seeing the person acquire that experience. And so much of this, that also kind of hits me how this is about experience more than it is, again, a technical skill.
And the technical gets put out, but it's really 20% of the time. Every time I've been mentor, man, I want to learn that skill.
Mm-hmm.
And of an hour conversation, it was a 20-minute, man, I want to hear more about the skill. And they're like, man, the skill's simple. That's just repetition. That's something that you got to do on your own. Here's the skill, go do that. But here's the downside, time away from your family. Let's talk about that. Talk about the disturbance of, hey, you want to make $1 million? Well, let's talk about what happens when you actually get it.
Mm-hmm.
Not the technique to get it. It's what happens to you as a human being that the mentor is really interested in passing it on. It's all those fine skills, the soft skills, if you want to call those.
Yeah. When you think about the situations you've been the mentee in, obviously we talked about the ultra marathon one, but are there any others that come to mind that you want to share with me as a way to kind of illustrate what's possible?
Well, one, just because when I was an active duty SEAL, I wanted to be a really good shooter. So a long distance shooter, there's a competition called PALMA, which is 800, 900, and 1,000 yard open sight shooting competition. The top shooter in the world was a woman. And I called her up and said, hey, my name's Tom Shea and I'm an active duty SEAL. You're the top shooter in the world for the past 4 years. And I would like to come spend a week with you all day to learn how you actually do that. And she goes, okay, it'll cost you this amount of money. I'm like, okay, done. When I got there, the experience that I've always had with mentors is it's boring. It's never exciting because successful people are boring as hell. They just do simple stuff all the time. They don't do this extravagant stuff. So the first morning we got up, and she goes, you can't have coffee because it affects your shooting. And you got to stop dipping Copenhagen. Like, oh my God, really? I thought we were going to shoot. She goes, I'm telling you exactly what you need to do. And then we went down in her basement and dry fired, which is no bullet.
Yeah, gun,
boring. I'm like, what should I be doing here? She goes, dry fire. I'm like, well, it's boring. She goes, it's not for me. I'm envisioning out on the range like it's happening. I'm putting myself out there in an imaginary space, imagining what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I don't understand. She goes, have you never heard of mental imagery? I'm like, not really. She described shooting. So I had to describe shooting. She goes, paint that scenario before every shot. That you're actually on the range looking at the wind. Like, well, okay, now it's got really elaborate. And then an hour of that, then we had breakfast, and then we went out to the range. And she has a setup that she has a perfect setup. Everything has to be set up exactly right. And she would take 20 minutes to get it right. I would get down behind the gun and be ready within like 30 seconds. Because that's why you're not a good shooter. Because you're not attentive to every detail. And I'm like, okay, I'm now listening. And her first shot at 800 yards, she shot 3 rounds within 2 inches of themselves.
Wow.
Okay. Okay. Now you have my attention. She goes, okay, shoot. And she stopped me at the second shot. She goes, that was a different shot. You didn't shoot 2 rounds the same way. You got to shoot them the same way each time. Like, well, how do you do that? She goes, shoot them the same way. Like, you got to tell me how to do that. She says, no, you got to notice that when it's wrong, not to take the shot. And it struck me as an odd thing to say. I wanted to hear the technique. Are you pulling back on the gun? All that stuff. She goes, that doesn't matter. Just do it the same way every time. She goes, well, you're not thinking the same thoughts every time either. Your chin's not on the same spot on the gun. And I was like, God, there's got to be a better way. She goes, you're doing it your way. You're not doing it my way. That's your issue. You came to learn from me, but you're doing it your way, which is my hat wasn't in my hand, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, that is exactly it. The mentee is already trying to get off and do it their way.
Yep. And I'm like, oh my God. She goes, okay, now what I want you to do, stand up right here, put your feet right on these 2 spots. Get down this way. So you have to put your knees down first. You put your hand down, then you put your knees on the same exact spot. She goes, now relax your abdomen and pelvis. Okay. Lean forward, put your elbow down, get the gun in this hand, grab the gun the same way every single time. And then you get into a position. She goes, you're not going to take this shot, but breathe in, exhale, breathe in, exhale. And look at your sight picture, which is look through the gun. She goes, what do you see? Describe it. And I didn't have any fine definition of how to describe it. You describe what you feel. She goes, describe the gun. What does it feel like on you? So I'm like, wow, I've never gone through that experience. She goes, now stand up and do it again. Stand up and do it again. So we went through probably 150 stupid, small, basic things. And I hadn't shot the gun yet. So we're out there for 3 hours and I hadn't even shot the gun other than the 2 shots. She goes, now, do you have a picture in your mind where the bullet's going to go? Yes. Do the same thing that we've been doing and let the bullet go there. The gun will go off when it's ready. And I'd heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
I get in a position, I look at the wind, make my wind call, which I didn't describe that, but it's a whole other reality. And the gun went off. She goes, where did it go? I said, it broke in the shooting world a half minute to the right. She goes, yep, it was exactly a half minute out. That's how you shoot. Now you got to do that every time. And wow, that was now a 4-hour discussion that was boring, didn't shoot any rounds. She goes, rounds don't count. It's all what's going on inside, which is then the mentor thing. Mm-hmm. The technique doesn't matter. You have to master this inside equation is what I call it.
Mm-hmm.
Every mentor has said the same thing about that. You got to master what's going on inside. Technique be damned.
Yeah, that's a lot of key points there. I think the key one, though, with this episode being focused on the mentee, you know, the things I heard are basically being open to learning not the way you want to do it or want them to tell you to do it, but the way they teach you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Being willing to, for lack of a better word, be bored. It's not necessarily all excitement and pizzazz, but it could be very, very basic. And there's a time factor to invest your attention. And again, be willing to be, I'd say beyond coached, but be willing to be directed in a very specific way. I say all that, Tom, and I think part of our society today, unfortunately, doesn't value some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes for an interesting challenge. Again, back to if I'm a mentee seeking a mentor, so much of what I heard today is probably counter to what advice would be, the common advice, if you will.
Yeah, if you structure it that way, you realize, man, if the mentee is chomping at the bit, or what I know about business through you and from other people in the past 8 years, is we devalue the mentee relationship because they don't bring everything to the table.
Mm-hmm.
They want an exchange of money. They want to get it done quickly. They're not in it for the actual experience. And it's very hard to teach or coach somebody if immediately they devaluing it by asking for money. Mm-hmm. You're not producing anything for me. Why would I pay you anything?
No.
So I'm getting all this feedback to me as a mentee. I'm getting paid to learn, I'm getting paid for my time, but I'm not delivering back to the organization any value yet. And that value could be extended out 90 days to 180 days where the organization hasn't received equal value back. Mm-hmm. However, if I come to the table going, I'll do it for free because I know you guys produce results, I'll do it for free. I'll pay you to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end, my hat's in my hand, I will have learned that skill set or I'll be gone, which is, it happens.
Yep.
And I just know the mentee-mentor relationship 90% of the time works.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the key thing from this episode is really giving the mentee some things to think about relative to how to approach the mentor, the being inspired, being inspiring, being engaged, being all in as the mentee. And again, not showing up with all your problems, expecting the mentor to fix them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another common issue. And to lean into the fact that you're going to need to be very, I'll say teachable, beyond coachable, teachable, be willing to be uncomfortable, and ultimately be willing to commit to an experience, not just kind of a passing fancy.
It's the weirdest thing now that you said it that way.
Mm-hmm.
What would it like if you were inspired every day you went to work? And that inspiration is up to you as the mentee. I see this playing out. I know it's difficult. I may even be at a period of time being browbeat by the mentor. Mm-hmm. Because the mentor doesn't take shit. That's the other part. You're here to do work. I don't want to hear the complaining. Let's go to work. If we have to deal with something, let's deal with it and move on. So the drama will diminish the mentor. The experience makes it less inspiring. Have the mentee be responsible for their own inspiration, not the mentor. I can't help you with inspiration, man. That comes from you. I wish I could give you a pill. You got to want to do this. Like even Goldman Sachs, not that that's the greatest mentor-mentee relationship. That's a ruthless place to enter. Like enter at your own peril. And if you make it through, you will succeed, guaranteed. But it's a suck factor 11 on a 5 scale. You know what I mean?
Yep.
If you see that as a mentee, I will suck this up. I will suffer. I will be uncomfortable because the end is interesting enough for me to show up every day. Same thing in the SEAL program. It's a terrible experience. There's nothing inspiring about it. On a day-to-day basis, you're not, wow, this is the greatest thing in the world. It's terrible. But you have to bring inspiration to it. And by the way, the instructors are mentors. They're not really teaching you skill. You're learning skills. They are thoroughly moved by you that you're dumb enough to try this. And I'm going to give you every bad situation that you have. And every time you overcome something, the instructor staff is like, holy cow, I'm glad I didn't have to do that. Seeing people suffer and get through it is the feedback to the mentor in the SEAL program. This guy suffered. He's now one of my brothers. And that's the feedback in that program. And it's a different notion, but it's for mentee.
I think as the mentee, you've got to be fully committed, not just mildly interested. And you've got to bring it and not put it on the mentor to carry the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another key distinction. Well, Tom, anything else on this topic before I wrap this episode on?
Work on inspiration everywhere.
Yeah.
Whether you're a mentor or mentee, articulate the muscle called inspiration as often as you can. Find something in somebody else that moves you to tears. Literally, find that in other people. Find it in yourself. Find it in your kid. Don't find all the problems that exist. Don't spend your time looking for problems to solve. Spend your time trying to figure out what moves you. And it changes things very quickly.
In an authentic way. Well, thank you very much, Tom, for being with us on this episode of Winning Through Culture on the mentee-mentor relationship. I really appreciate you as always. It's great to have you with us, and thanks for inspiring me and so many other people that are a part of your Unbreakable Leadership following. So until we are together again, this is another episode of Winning Through Culture with Tim Flanagan and Tom Shea. And we'll see you soon for our next episode on the mentee-mentor relationship.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks.